essentially force insurance companies to be blind. So if you have a 19-year-old male, a 19-year-old female that otherwise have the same record, I don't see what you're saying, I think, is that the insurance companies will find a way to differentiate. Now, what are they going to do? Are they going to do that based on the fact that you're going to ask them to check off male or female on an application form because someone's named Tom or Sally or Marion and Marion? Because I don't think, if I understand this, this does require the insurance companies and setting rates to be blind to that factor. So how could you differentiate? How could you discriminate if, in fact, you were complying with the law?
Mr. Chairman. Representative Burton, I suspect, again, having been in the insurance business for a number of years, that the companies would find a way, and I can't tell you how. I would know that we could not check off a box that was male or female. That would be legislated. And we might send in Mary Jones and Sam Jones, and the companies may look at that and find a way not to write that. I'm not sure, and I'm speaking for, I don't want to speak for the companies, but I am saying the company, I am the upfront underwriter. I am the one that determines what the risk is and where we place it. And if it turned out that we were writing a lot of young males, the company was experiencing a great deal of loss from them and not getting adequate premium, I would lose my privilege to write for that company. I'm concerned about that. I can't answer your question as far as how the companies would be able to do that legally. I don't know. But okay.
So my guess is that in order to maintain the profitable return, the return on profit, the return on investment, essentially the insurance companies need to do, if they're going to comply with the law, and I think most of them will.
Yes.
Unless companies are insidious, and I hope they're not, they'll find ways to sneak out of it. What they'll do is they'll maintain a higher premium for everybody. See, I don't agree that they're going to, they may ultimately try to exclude a class of people and find some way to do that. My guess is that they won't do that. What they'll do is they'll simply keep the rates at the maximum amount in order to make sure they're covered, and that therefore all classes of people are going to continue to be paid to pay higher rates. It seems to me like that's the pure economics of it. Unless they find some insidious way to get around, if this law passed, the fact that they're supposed to remain blind. So I think their response would be different. They would, rather than trying to find a way out of it, they would comply with the law, and the result of that would be that everybody's rates would be higher.
Well, Mr.
Maybe
Representative Burton, you could be right. I don't know how this is going to work, and I don't think any of us do. I suspect that everyone's rates could go higher. In some states, they have not. I do want to go back and answer your questions about the question about the change in the rates in 1943 when I started the insurance business. We did not differentiate between male and female. In 1963, when I had teenage daughters, we did not differentiate in male and female. It started about in 1960. As more people became two-car family and three-car families, and usually the male had the automobile, was able to drive the automobile rather than female. And I think that's what started the changes in the rate structure. As I see it now, the male and female rates are coming closer together. Where they used to be 300% apart in 1965 to 70, now they are coming to the point where they're maybe 50% apart, $200 versus $300. 10 years ago, we were charging twice as much for a male as a female. And I think with our social and economic changes and the girls driving, having the availability of faster cars, women working, young ladies getting out of college or high school or whatever and going to work and having our whole society is changing. And I think that eventually we're going to have the same rates anyhow. That's why I don't think it needs to be changed.
Council, you had a question.
One quick question. Ms. Williams, you handle several insurance companies on auto insurance. I gave the example of the 55-year-old woman with 30 years experience welding tickets. Does she pay the same rates as a 55-year-old man without any tickets? you have various insurance companies and across the board can make a...
No, no. It depends on, if they live together. If it's a husband and wife, they're both 55 years old, and they have no tickets, they pay exactly the same rate.
How different?
If they live apart, the female will pay 10% less on three of my major companies in the office than the male.
And the same in the remainder?
Same in the remainder...
Of your companies?
The other companies I represent are mostly the surplus line markets, the non-standard companies, and they do not give credits or debits only on driving record.
Okay, I'll let them approve it.
Sorry. For the questions, I'm getting my marching orders. We are going to recess until 7 p.m.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Stan?
Yes.
Subcommittee, I'll come back to order. We're going to proceed by finishing the testimony on 2654. Now, is Mr. Brown here or Ms. Coe? Okay, they submitted testimony for the record then. Paul, is it Budke? The attrition rate is set in. Mark, is it Jurgen? Jurgen? Deborah Pierce? Tom Reichert? Anybody? Raises their hand at this point. Sharon Bender.
They're wise. They know the saturation point.
Les Morton.
It's
Deb's Pots theory. Hold the hearing at 6 a.m. Linda St. Jean.
Chairperson, I'm still here. But
oh, we appreciate your diligence, and I'm sure we're going to appreciate your testimony even more.
The last one?
Yes.
Oh, good.
The best for last.
Mr. Chairperson, members of the committee, my name is Linda St. Jean, and I'm here on behalf of the Alliance of American Insurers. I'm also a private attorney here in Salem with the firm of Allen Storz Fox and Soucy. The Alliance of American Insurers is a national trade association comprised of 150 property and casualty insurance companies. At the outset, it should be noted that the Alliance does not take issue with this measure's prohibitions against discrimination in the availability of insurance or in the application of insurance rates based upon race, religion, marital status, color, or national origin. It is only the prohibition against the use of gender as a rating classification for pricing purposes that is a substantial concern to us. I promised that I would be brief, and because most of the prior witnesses have hit areas that I was interested in covering, there are just a couple of remarks that I'd like to make concerning comments about the availability of insurance, which were remarks addressed at the prior hearing on this measure, comments made by the proponents of House Bill 2654. One of the arguments which was stressed by the proponents of House Bill 2654 related to the availability of certain types of insurance to women. There was a claim that under certain life insurance policies, a married woman can purchase coverage only up to the amount of coverage held by her husband. In all likelihood, the policy referred to was a family policy under which one spouse is the principal insured and the amount of coverage on the other spouse is less, based according to a set formula. Yet it should be noted that these policies are underwritten and sold based upon consumer demand on a sex-neutral basis. In other words, either spouse, male or female, can be the principal insured. The choice depends upon the couple's insurance needs. A second assertion which has been made concerning the availability of insurance is that disability income insurance is often unavailable to women whose jobs are performed at home. while this type of insurance is available to men with identical job and risk factors. This claim is simply out of date. There are companies which presently write homemaker disability insurance, yet few consumers have chosen to purchase this form of insurance. With regard to home-based, professional, or self-employed women, disability insurance is available on the same basis as it is to men in all states. This equal availability is mandated by regulations in effect in 19 or more states. The regulations are based on a model regulation adopted in 1975 by the National Association of Insurance Commissioners with the support of the life and health insurance business. With that, Mr. Chairperson and members of the committee, I would like simply to submit the written testimony that I have prepared, other than the remarks that I've made this evening. Thank you.
I certainly appreciate your written testimony. Are there questions from the committee members? Thank you, and thank you very much
for
bearing with us today. Okay. At the risk of being strangled by the committee, are there any other witnesses on House Bill 2654? Okay, we'll close the hearing on that bill. I do want to ask also if there were any other witnesses on House Bill 2881. Okay. And I did want to ask Mr. Bessonet, did you want to say anything on House Bill 2452?
Mr. Chairman?
Council?
For House Bill 2452, we have a letter from a friend, Doran Pierce. Can you submit that into the record?
That will be part of today's record, yes. Thank you, Council. I'm sorry.
House Bill 2452.
Oh.
That's still on here.
Yes. Would you like to testify now?
Yes,
please.
Are there further witnesses on that? I apologize for writing late.
No. We had a hearing earlier today on this issue.
Right.
And we recessed and came back this evening for that. Were you here this afternoon?
No, I was not.
If you could identify yourself for the record, please.
Yes, my name is John Bueller, B-U-E-H-L-E-R. I'm an attorney. I practice as a partner with the Bowman Hauser Bailey Law Firm. Mr. Jim Knoll of our office was here at approximately a week or two ago when you had your last hearing concerning this bill on behalf of the Oregon Association of Defense Counsel. Mr. Knoll was unable to appear this evening and asked me to come down, present to you the written presentation which I have now submitted on behalf of the Oregon Association of Defense Counsel, and also to speak in general terms concerning this bill. The position of the Oregon Association of Defense Counsel is fairly simple, and that's that there are adequate remedies that currently exist under Oregon law for those situations in which there is egregious or outrageous or other behavior on behalf of insurance claims adjusters that go beyond the bounds of what should be allowed by in the practice of insurance claims adjusting. The remedy that's being proposed by House Bill 2452 is something that is not necessary, will add to the cost of insurance premiums by the honest premium paying public and will result in virtually every dispute between an insurance company and an insured, resulting in what would be called a bad faith claim. This can only serve to increase the cost of insurance to the public and is unnecessary in light of existing law. The points that were made in the presentation by the Willamette Law student, whose name escapes me right now, but there was a written presentation previously by that person concerning the need in Oregon for some type of civil remedy for unlawful claim settlement practices. The points that she makes are not entirely accurate in that there is a remedy now that exists in proper circumstances where an insured can obtain actual damages, mental distress damages, punitive damages in the situation where that person has been truly wronged. Also, in any dispute in Oregon between an insured and an insurance company, the insured is allowed to recover attorney fees, and because of that provision, which is not uniform throughout the states, the insureds have a remedy, have a method of obtaining an attorney to represent their interests, and in fact have been quite successful in obtaining counsel to represent their interests. The attorney fee provision in other states, for example in Washington, an insured is not automatically entitled to recover attorney fees in any dispute between an insured and the insurance company. In Washington, for example, the insured is required to establish bad faith on the part of the insurance company before the insured can recover attorney fees. In Oregon, we've made it automatic by statute. It's ORS 743.114. So there are remedies. In any straight contract dispute, the parties have the right to have their counsel. The insured has a right to have the insurance company, assuming the insured wins, pay for the insured's attorney fees, probably has a right to collect prejudgment interest in the appropriate case, has a right to collect under the terms of the insurance policy, and those remedies are sufficient in any kind of case where all it is a dispute about coverage under the insurance policy. And under existing common law remedies, there are existing and sufficient remedies to take care of those situations where there is truly an abuse. Furthermore, I believe that Ms. Josephine Driscoll, as I understand it, was going to testify earlier today, and although I was not present here, it's our understanding that the insurance commissioner's office has taken the position that this is a matter for the insurance commissioner to enforce. One point I'd like to make concerns the wording of the Unfair Claim Settlement Practices Act. If you look at existing ORS 746.230, which is what will become a civil remedy if this act passes, that act is set up in terms that are sufficiently, I should say vague maybe, that it gives the insurance commissioner flexibility in attempting to enforce the provisions of that act. The act is set up in terms of adopting reasonable standards, making a reasonable investigation, completing an investigation in good faith, the kind of terms that if they become part of a civil remedy will result in cases going to a jury or proceeding through civil litigation in virtually every single case in which an insured presents a claim. Those terms are so general that there is no specific way that an insurance company can know whether the terms have been violated, whether exactly what it is that an insurance company has supposedly done that is improper, and in fact provides no guidance for the insurance company in claims handling practices. The regulations that have been adopted by the Insurance Commissioner's Office are not intended and never were intended, and in fact, the regulatory adopting measure specifically stated that they were not intended to provide a civil remedy. Those regulations provide greater guidance for an insurance company, but are not intended, and as I read this bill, will not result in any civil private cause of action on behalf of an insured, and should not, because it's a matter for the insurance commissioner as far as a regulatory matter is concerned. That's all I have. It's the basically defense counsel's, Oregon Association of Defense Counsel's position, and the insurance industry's position that it's not broken, don't fix it, and